This is Oklahoma Perspective. The OSBI is hiring. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills talked to OSBI Director Rick Adams about how great the need is and how it got to this point.
You've been doing this job for what, like a year?
Year and a half, yes.
About a year and a half. And you walked into an agency that had been cut to the bone. Am I lying?
No, you're not lying at all. That's a true statement.
So, and you were saying especially the investigative side.
Yes, the organization had to triage basically where it was putting its resources at. There are certain resources within the Bureau that they had to maintain at a particular level to ensure that they were able to continue to deliver services to the entire state as a whole. And so, one of our divisions in particular took the bulk of the hit, which would have been the investigative division, trying to, make sure that they kept the budget in check and kept people employed during the time that the big budget crisis was going on.
Okay, I'm notorious for not taking notes, but I remember at the beginning you said there was basically three.
We have three divisions.
So
three
investigative division. What are the other two?
We have the investigative division, we have our information services division, and we have the criminalistics division. We also have our support services division, but it's very small and it takes care of, it's more logistical support, legal, pay, manpower, stuff, those type of things. Make sure the building's light stays on.
Okay, so go through those for me again. Criminal investigation.
Your investigative division.
Investigative division.
Your criminalistics division. Which is your forensic science. The people that are scientists back here that do the work.
DNA testing.
Right, all that kind. And then your information services. And those people are the folks that do, they're the ones that are putting all the statistical data together and all the criminal history records are all going together. All that stuff has to take place in the background to make sure that the entire justice system stays connected and we can draw statistics and keep records straight and make sure we got the right person record matched to fingerprints and all that kind of stuff all takes place there in those areas.
Which I imagine that has been a major area of transformation in the modern day age.
We are currently in a process of transforming thousands of criminal history records into digital format, some back into the 1918-1912 periods.
Wow.
That you're trying to get into a digital format and get it so we can destroy the old paper files. Record rooms full
like
of
warehouses of this stuff that could be put onto a hard drive somewhere.
Right.
All right, so talk to me a little bit about, and we spoke briefly about, there was, budgeting was not good. You walked into a bare bones agency.
Yeah.
So this most recent legislature, you got a little bit of help. Not everything you wanted. It wasn't the sun, the moon, the stars, but you got some help.
We were very appreciative this session. Obviously, we walked in and we asked for a lot because the organization needed a lot. We asked for, and it was across the board within our organization. It wasn't just an investigative division. It was things that we had looked at. Everything the organization needed to really be the unmatched 21st century investigative organization it needed to be. And if I added all those things up, it come to a price tag there was no way for me to ask for. So we went in and we cut back and we looked at what we feel like we needed now. That was absolute things we needed now. The budget we presented asked for $11.1 million. Now, we didn't get that. However, I am very appreciative. The governor's office, The House and Senate both worked really hard with everybody else because, everybody else has been in the same shape we have been. They'd all
right.
been under
this
the same
is not time. The only not agency. Right.
Yeah, everybody had been in the same type of pressure we had. They worked really good with us and gave us enough budget that we stopped the bleeding. And we are now in the process of rebuilding. And I think that we made a big dent in that just this year. And some of the things you saw today, it come out of just some of the early phases of us just changing the direction and putting new focus on where we need to go. And so I feel like our organization, we're in really good shape right now. Obviously, we need to still continue to increase our manpower levels and things like that down the road. There's many other issues that all the other organizations are facing. We're going to continue to go back and try to address those things over time, but we got a good path ahead of us, I believe, and we got good leadership that seems to be trying to help us
at all levels of state government.
Yes.
So let's talk just a, for a minute about you. Now, you said you took over a year and a half ago, but did not step out of a vacuum. You've been in law enforcement in Oklahoma.
I've been in law enforcement in Oklahoma for almost 40 years. I got into law enforcement in 1980 at a police department in Elk City.
Elk City?
Went to Edmond as a young cop, and then I joined the Highway Patrol in Oklahoma, and I was with OHP for 32 years, and when I left there to retire. And just a month after I left, I got a call and said, "Hey, would you be interested in considering this?" And
was that Governor Fallon that called you?
No, it was not. I got called. I got called through the as we were making the transition, the AG's office investigation and some things that was going on at the time. They'd asked me and Bob Ricks to come in and kind of step into the middle of a gap. And then the commission was nice enough to keep me around afterwards. So so we've been moving forward since that point in time.
All right. So 39, about to be 40 years in law enforcement in Oklahoma. What do you think is the biggest change?
Biggest change.
For you guys that are out on the street, you gals, that now, there weren't that many then, but there are now, that are out on the street.
I think the biggest change right now is the fact that we're in an information age. You look at the technology has changed dramatically. You look at, you talk about the criminalists that was in here today. There was things when I went into law enforcement in 1980, and we would go to a rape scene, about the only thing that you could find, you could tell is that it was the suspect was probably had a positive blood type. Mm-hmm. Now if we still have that evidence somewhere in a evidence room, we may have a suspect we can find in CODIS. So there's been some dramatic changes that's happened in the technology area.
It seemed like technology was kind of a theme today. I don't think it was, deliberately that way. But, we talked about the advances in being able to identify shell casings. We talked about getting those ridiculous number of rape kits finally analyzed and tested and that moving forward. Talking about using DNA, like you said, to track suspects backwards in genealogical time so that you can figure out who they are now. It does seem like it's been a huge change.
Technology's been huge, and we're looking at our organization's got some outstanding investigators. And the cool thing about the investigators today is they've grown up with the technology. And so it gives them an advantage that maybe some of the folks that were my age in 1980.
And my age, let's be fair.
Okay, yeah.
I graduated high school in 1980.
Okay. Well, when I got in law enforcement in 1980, some of the folks that were my age in 1980 would have never thought about the use of some of these things.
Couldn't have dreamt of it.
Yeah, wouldn't have dreamed of it. The young people we've got coming into our organization today know all about it, and they know how to look at things outside the box and use that technological advantage to their advantage. And so those advancements to their advantage, and really feel good about where they are there.
The key is that you can have the fanciest toolbox in the world, but you got to have the smarts and
the
drive to use it.
You got to have a smart investigator. You have the drive and you got to have the smarts to use it. That's exactly right. Or you can have all the toolboxes you want. If you don't have that, it doesn't work. So it makes us we need to recruit the top cut of police officers to come in to be doing the homicide investigations for the state, because that's what we're asked to do as an organization.
So let's talk about recruiting. What's it take to become an OSBI officer? How do I do that?
You have to have a bachelor's degree. We prefer that you have a few years of experience in law enforcement somewhere, preferably with some sort of investigative experience, but we can bring you in at agent two level to move you up. Have to go through an extremely rigorous background to get on board. That's what we're looking at to try to bring you on board. Right now, we've got the salary up. I think top salary for an agent three right now is $71,300 a year. It's a decent salary.
That is agent three. Is that a starting?
No, it's not a starting agent. That's a top-down
agent.
So
you start at one and you go to three?
Go to three.
Okay.
That's where we sit right now. And we got openings. We got a lot of openings right now. We're looking to rebuild. We're rebuilding right now.
Okay. So I know you need to get out of here, but let me ask you about that rebuilding phase. Mm-hmm. When you came on board a year and a half ago, you had roughly how many?
We're sitting about where we are right now in about 75. So we've gone up a little bit and we've gone down a little bit.
But you've got funding now for...
We have funding now that we'll be able to bring our agent level up into the 90s. We're hoping to, if we can recruit enough, we'll be into at least around 92 by the end of the year. Now, obviously, that means I've got to have a quality recruit walk in the door that we're trying to recruit, because we won't just hire anybody. So I could have five applicants come in, and if they really don't meet what we're looking for, that doesn't mean they're going to get a job. So we want to make sure we're recruiting the best and brightest to come in to do that job.
OSBI Director Rick Adams. Recently, the state of Oklahoma revised the laws as to what constitutes felony theft. KRMG's Russell Mills talked to Public Relations Director for Quick Trip, Mike Thornbrew, about how the new revised laws have affected theft at Quick Trip.
All right, so we're on with Mike Thornbrew, a longtime spokesman for Quick Trip. How long have you been at Quick Trip?
Probably some of our folks out here too long, but no, it's been an absolute honor to represent and speak for Quick Trip. But, I mean, I love everybody out here.
You didn't answer the question, though. How long have you been doing this? It's been a while.
Well, I answered it not the way you wanted. No, honestly, I'll celebrate my 25th year.
I was going to say, pretty much since I've lived in Tulsa, I think you've been the face of Quick Trip. And I appreciate
you've noticed how my hair has gone gray and thinned. And
my hair has gone years ago, so
thicker.
You got nothing on me. All right, so yesterday you were at a meeting this is in Oklahoma City, I think.
Yeah, it was, Russell, what it was, I was asked to appear. It was a meeting of one of the committees that is considering criminal justice reform and certain items in regards to declassification. So I said, sure, as usual, we'll go give our opinions and see what people think.
All right, so it was the Criminal Justice Reclassification Coordination Council. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Something like that.
But generally, I think the meeting was chaired by our Attorney General, State Attorney General Mike Hunter, and Tulsa County DA Steve Kunzweiler. And then you were saying the audience was largely law enforcement and legal community. No surprises there. This is their wheelhouse.
And obviously a lot of folks that were advocates, that are for criminal justice reform.
Right.
It was a well thought out committee, I thought.
All right. So you mentioned some statistics that I think people would find surprising, but it's what Quick Trip is seeing. Obviously, you keep close track of what's happening in your stores, and apparently there's been quite the uptick in theft. Are we talking like shoplifting?
Yeah, it is. And the whole point we were trying to make is, look, we understand that there's been a lot of positive changes in criminal justice reform, and we believe that there's going to be some others. But anytime you pass sweeping legislation, I mean, there's always going to be things that maybe didn't think about it, or maybe it can be tweaked. And our whole point was, and we only directed it at those who are habitual career criminals. And the way the law is currently is, it takes up to $1,000 to constitute a felony. And I don't think that when they passed this bill, they took into consideration all the various businesses and how many thefts would have to take place before you reach that threshold. And our whole point was, as you do deliberation and you discuss everything, please give that consideration. I think most people, were interested in it and thought it was a little provoking. I'm sure some disagreed. We're just asking people to keep an open mind and discuss it.
Well, that's fair. And I don't know if you know this, and I don't, and I guess I need to ping Mr. Kunzweiler or somebody who would have the answer, but I mean, is it cumulative? Like if I come steal $20 worth of stuff, I would have to do that, 50 times to get to that $1,000 level and before they would come and arrest me for a felony? Or is it $1,000 per incident, or how does that work? Do you know?
No, you can. The legislators a couple of years ago, the answer is yes to your first part, but the legislators changed a provision of that a couple of years ago where they allowed for what's called the aggregation, where you could have a multiple offense that got up to that amount. And honestly, what you're finding out right now is a lot of the retail businesses like Quick Trip are sharing information with other businesses because we're pretty much dealing with the same folks. If they're stealing from everybody you can imagine, and we're able to coordinate that, build cases, if it's accepted by the DA's office for prosecution to do so. And that's all we're asking.
Well, that seems fair to me. Now, let me ask you a kind of a tangential question. A few months back,
you never ask tangential questions.
Well, it kind of is. So, a few months back, we had a discussion about a new policy that you guys were starting or trying out, like having security people in the store. I'm guessing that that program is continuing, and is it expanding? And do you think it's going to make a dent, or has it made a dent, or?
The answer is yes to all, is that we've had tremendous success by hiring our own security officials in some of our locations. I mean, obviously our employees love it, our customers love it, and yes, you know, we're seeing very good improvement in regards to all kinds of things. They're not just there, Russ, as to be security guards. I mean, they do some tasks if needed as well, and they do a lot of what we call community policing, if you will. If you have customers who need help with something, carrying something to their car, or they can't reach something, or they have questions, I mean, they're doing that. So the answer is that part of it's done very well. Who knows how much more we're going to expand? But in addition to that, like we talked about, in many locations and like many other businesses, we also still employ private security officials, you know, to provide assistance. And, you know, from time to time, we will use off-duty law enforcement to do the same thing. So it's making a dent, and we're trying, and we fully recognize you're never going to stop, you know, people stealing 100%. That's not a reality. But we are trying to slow it down.
Well, and I mean, obviously you need to. That's a loss to the business.
Well, and it's a loss to the consumer,
right?
As well. I mean, no business. I don't care what business that you're in and what you sell. You just can't absorb losses. I mean, at some point, some of that cost goes back to the consumer. We don't think it's right. That's why we're trying to stop it.
And were there any other retailers there at this meeting yesterday, or? I guess it was by invitation. So did they just invite you, or did you hear from other folks, other business owners?
I was the first. Honestly, I was the first one on the list, and I gave my talk, and I had to get back to Tulsa to do business. So I don't know if there were other people who, you know, gave remarks, or what the rest of the agenda was like. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. And did you propose any, you know, possible solutions, or does Quick Trip have an idea?
Yeah, I did. And is one of the things is, I mean, we think that there ought to be some form of consequences for these people that are habitual over and over again. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be incarceration. I mean, you know, they keep talking about treatment centers. We think that's a good idea. You know, they're talking about boot camps for youthful offenders and all these various things. I think they all ought to be looked at. But one thing that we did, which was kind of ironic, if you will, even though the meeting was about declassification, is, you know, it's a fact that a lot of people that steal certain items from everybody is they resell it. And if you had unscrupulous retailers and businesses out there reselling this willingly and knowingly stolen product, hit them with a heck of a fine, you know, pull their charter to do business. I think that will make a difference. I don't know that that's a fact, but we've seen it in the past where people have gone after these businesses and, you know, those shady characters have shut down or they moved on, and it made a difference for a small period of time. So we're trying to bring positive things that we think will make a difference. But at the same time, We want our concerns to be voiced, and hopefully people will hear it.
So let me make sure I understand what you're saying. So some of these people are stealing stuff from Quick Trip and then taking it Ralph's Quickie Mart or whatever. I'm making that up.
Or Billy Bob's Clothing. And, I mean, no business is immune
right,
from
right.
It.
No real businesses that we're not going to mention because we don't know. But so then the owner of that business, who is unscrupulous, as you said, with a wink and a nudge, he buys this stuff on the cheap and then turns around and resells it. So he's making money.
Sure. And he
knows this stuff's stolen, right? I mean, there's no way that one of these people's going to walk in with, I don't know, five cases of beer, and he's not going to know that something's hanky's going on.
That's blatantly against the law. And I'll give you a perfect example. I don't know if you recall, I think it was maybe 2 weeks ago, an individual who was stealing, and he was reselling it to one of the local bars here in town.
Wow.
That kind of stuff's going on. I'm not telling you it happens every time. That's naive. And it's not new. That's naive. But I really do think if you can cut the head off the snake on some of these things, maybe you'll slow it down a little bit.
Quick Trip Public Relations Director Mike Thornbrew. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.